welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 505. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Matthew Ford.
Hello!
Back from a little pit stop last week when unfortunately no one was available, but as you can see, we've kept it a bit more consistent this year and we'll continue to do so. We're hoping to get Cameron on next week. We'll maybe see Rick in a little bit. Rick would have been in today, but for the fact that he's currently lounging around in a hotel in London.
Shocking. Unbelievable.
Taking Valentine's Day very seriously, apparently.
Yeah, he said he's down the road from Buckingham Palace. Proper rubbing it in.
Well, yeah. I will probably run out and get my wife a card at some point. Have that, Rick. Who loves who more? How are you doing on the Valentine's front?
Sort of managed to palm it off. as I do every year, and push it to our anniversary, which takes place in March. So, because it's just an excuse for cards and stuff, and you know, there's that thing of like Valentine's Day, it's every day and all that.
Is it really? This is an exciting litany of excuses that you're dropping out here, and I'm not sure I buy any of them. Well, I hope all of you listening will have had an enjoyable Valentine's Day in whatever capacity, whether that is with a partner of some kind or simply indulging in a bit of self-care. I was going to say self-love, but I stopped myself. How about that, yeah? We have returned with a huge grab bag of news and reviewy things, however. So we can talk to you about Gwent coming to Android, Hugh coming to mobile, Untitled Goose Game's success at the DICE Awards and other things as well. Plus Warhammer Quest Silver Tower and its imminent arrival, Scythe Digital Edition coming to mobile. There's loads of stuff on the way. We're going to explore all of it. Plus new releases, including the likes of Shadowgun War Games, which has finally appeared. We've got Veritas, Overdrive City, Daddish, and more. But first, the news. So another week, another awards ceremony in the games industry. This time it's the DICE Awards, which I mistook for something being connected to the company DICE. But in fact, this stands for, I think, diversity, inspiration, or innovation, creativity, and something else. I'm not sure. Either way.
Entertainment, maybe.
Sure, why not? Big old event, lots of people there, and lots of winners, of course. Winners which pretty much replicate the winners of the other awards from the year. It's all a bit samey now, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's awfully strange, and it's like a bit worrying. It's like, is everyone just copying and pasting for mobile? Like, oh.
Yeah, there's sort of two answers, which is either like, well, these are the good games, and so whenever anyone looks at them, they agree that these are all the good games. So that could be that, or it could just be this sort of boring and people aren't playing the games properly. We obviously focus on the Portable Game of the Year category. The story's up on PG Biz, and you can go and see that Matthew wrote, along with a full rundown of all the nominees and winners. But the nominations in the Portable Game category were Call of Duty Mobile, Grindstone, Sayonara Wild Hearts, Sky, Children of the Light, and What the Golf, which is, I say, pretty much the exact rundown from every other list I've seen.
Good selection, though.
Very good selection. So can't knock it. What the Golf is great and a little indie, and you know, Call of Duty Mobile has been very popular.
I'm addicted to Grindstone.
Yeah, you're now addicted, so you're well in there. And obviously, Sky was lovely. The winner was Sayonara Wild Hearts, so that's Samogo getting a nod, which I like because it feels like the word of mouth has almost been the thing on that one, because it came out and it got some really, really good reviews. And some other reviews which are kind of like 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10, going, yeah, it's really good and it makes a good first impression, but some of the levels are a bit weak and it's sort of kind of short. And there was a slight kind of from a lot of people. But as time has gone on, I feel like the opinion has shifted to just, no, this is a great and wonderful thing.
Yeah, it's definitely been a breakout. I think the soundtrack's helped it a lot because the amount of people I see, you know, recommending it online, and just if you check the Spotify list, the amount of listens, it's got ridiculously high numbers.
Yeah, having a banging soundtrack is a good way into everyone's heart, and a good way to get a game with a big long tail on it. Just look at Doom, like the amount of focus that the soundtrack got for that game, rightfully so, because it was so incredibly strong. It kind of breaks out just outside of the game itself and increases overall buzz for the whole thing. I am very excited for Doom Eternal. It's going to be
not too long now.
I know. I am hype.
Demons and Animal Crossing on one day.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. I wasn't aware of the Animal Crossing one. It's not really on my radar.
There's all these people saying it's going to be the most like bizarre day ever. Going from flipping between Doom and Animal Crossing, the most peaceful game ever and the most like blood-soaked mental adventure you could possibly think of.
And it's a tonal whiplash. Yeah, so you can see the full awards listing if you're really into awards things, but you know, we feel obliged to mention it, but awards are meaningless, they mean anything, so who really, really cares? Now, what we have got is a really good list of games that are going to be coming and have been announced to arrive on mobile or Android or iOS in the very near future. So we'll start with Gwent, which has been out on iOS for a while. I can't even remember if I played this the first week it came out. I dabbled with it a little bit in The Witcher 3 when I was playing it. But I'm not one of the guys who goes in and plays the card games in big console games. I'm not a guy who spent loads of time playing poker in Red Dead Redemption, for example. Mm. But I know it's been very popular on iOS. It has now been officially confirmed for Google Play and Android on March the 24th. There was a little listing that kind of got leaked and CD Projekt Red were being a bit coy and half denying it. But they have subsequently announced that yes, March 24th, you can get your Gwent on.
Get your Gwent on. Are we making that a thing now?
Sure, why not? So we've got lots of updates for the game that's been out on iOS, that version. So I think it was October-ish it came out, but...
That sounds right.
Yeah, The Merchants of Ophir. That's been the expansion that appeared in December. So if you're an Android and you've been waiting and jonesing for that Gwent, then the wait is not much longer.
No, it's done hugely successful as well. I mean, apparently it's made 68% up of CD Projekt Red's revenue since launch.
Really?
Yeah, it's like crazy numbers.
Holy, what, as in of their total revenue?
Since launch, yeah.
Damn. Okay, that's terrifying, considering like how popular The Witcher 3 was.
But you just got to think sales for that are probably dying down.
That's true, they're at a low ebb.
Because that was like 5 years ago. I mean, when... Cyberpunk comes out, obviously, that'll...
Yeah, it'll get a bump. And I know that it got a real bump when the TV series came out.
Yes, very true.
So that's obviously helped. Yeah, tip Henry for Cavill, any game out there, yes, get Henry Cavill to star in an extremely high-budget TV series if your game is, you know, struggling for sales. Which it wasn't really anyway, because it's really good. Speaking of older games, getting a new bump, Hue, which you might remember from consoles and that from like 2016, I think it was, around that era. And it was a lovely little platformer which played with colour. Have you seen or played this?
It's Badland Publishing, isn't it?
Are they publishing it? I'm not sure. It was a Fiddlesticks Games was the developer. And what the game was based around was taking control of your little character hopping through a world. All the main objects in the platforms, or the primary platforms anyway, are black. Your character is coloured in black. But the background, so the skybox, if you like, can be changed. So you control the colour of the environment, the main backdrop colour, which is important for revealing platforms that may be hidden. So you might be trying to hop across a chasm and there's a purple platform in the middle, but then there's a huge gap after it and you need to like, there needs to be another platform there and you can't see it. It's not visible. So you hop onto the blue platform and the background might be purple. So what you do is you then change your color wheel. You go in there and you make the background a different color, say make it blue. And suddenly when you change it to blue, you realize there's actually a purple platform there. And it's been there the whole time because the background was purple, you couldn't see it. However, by changing the background to blue, you are now plummeting through the air because the one you were standing on was blue and it's now become invisible. So that's the kind of dynamics you're playing with, making platforms visible and invisible by changing the color wheel. And there's a lot of like having to change it mid-jump as you're hopping between platforms in order to make one visible and the other one disappear. And it sounds a bit more complicated than it is. It's very easy to pick up and grab.
No, it does look very cool, just looking through the trailer and everything. And I'm sure I've seen this mechanic used before in stuff like Mario games before, where you jump and then a platform appears every time you jump, stuff like that. But combining it with the color aspect is actually pretty neat.
Yeah, it's one of those good little hooks where when you pick it up and you play and you go, oh yeah, and within 15 seconds, I get this, this is smart. It is going to be coming to iOS and Android in April, April the 23rd specifically. So if you want to get your hands on that, if you're familiar with the old game, look at the old reviews, see if you like it. This is something I can see working very well on iOS because it's a color wheel. When you open the thing that changes the color, it is literally a little wheel that you would, you know, with your thumbstick on your console kind of rotate around like some weapon selection, you know, tools. I can see that working very neatly by just pressing your thumb on the screen and then, you know, dragging your thumb to the appropriate thing when the indicator blossoms out from your thumb. So keep your eyes on April for Hue, H-U-E, if you're interested in that. We've also got, here's one from the very distant past. Beat Hazard. Have you ever heard of Beat Hazard?
I haven't, no. Tell me more.
So it is a shmup, like you know, classic space shmup. You are a spaceship, run around, blast all the things. A big boss appears every now and then. But it's powered by music. Specifically, your music.
Okay, I'm interested.
The idea was that it would be able to go into your phone or whatever and then pull tracks that you have downloaded, analyze those tracks, and then turn those tracks into levels.
Okay, that sounds very ambitious.
Well, it's something that's been done before, and it's something that is kind of... There used to be ways of auto-generating levels by using... Because it's just an algorithm. And so clearly it's analysing, like, I don't know, the BPM or the volumes or the peaks, and like one element of the music would control one thing. So when the music suddenly gets frantic, it'll spawn a load of enemies or a particular kind of enemy or something like that. But this goes all the way back to like auto-generating levels using save code. So for example, Worms. The original Worms, when it was released on the Amiga, way back when, rather than you being able to like save levels, what you would do is it would give you a level code, as in like a random bundle of letters, and you would type that code in and it would generate the level, because each one of the letters in that code represented something to the algorithm, whether it be like the amount of platforms or the steepness of the hills in the platforms, or, you know, the particular kind of objects that are placed in the level. And what that meant is you could go into that level save thing and it actually is a generator. So you could just type in a sentence or type in a word and it would generate a level based on that word. So it was a great way of coming up with an endless amount of levels and then remembering them and just being like, oh, let's go and play Hooterfish, because you happened to type in Hooterfish one time and it was a really good level. So it's kind of pulling that only the songs are the inspiration. And it was quite good. We've got videos of this, like, before I went anywhere near the AppSpy channel, when it was AppSpy, not Pocket Gamer, because it was 2012. So proper old school. Now, we've got Beat Hazard 2 coming to iOS.
Quite a long development cycle then. So for this, can you hook this up to the likes of, like, Spotify and stuff?
Well, that's what I'm interested in, because the industry's changed a bit since then, and I think, yeah, now everyone's got Spotify on their phones. I'm not sure if Spotify was even a thing in 2012, or at least whether everyone had it on their phones. So it says you'll be able to do it through your own music library or through internet radio stations via Shoutcast, if you don't mind the songs being sorted by a different source. So I've got to imagine it'll let you analyze Spotify, because that is how the vast majority of people play music.
100%. That seems a easy collaboration to make.
Totally. The issue's always been slightly like, is there a usage rights thing with this? Because you're using other people's property to generate your stuff, you're using someone else's song to build your level. Is that some weird conflict of interest? Are people going to turn and say you can't do that?
Mm.
The song is playing in the background of the level. So you're sort of incorporating other people's music into your game, which is something that people usually like to charge for. So it must be okay, because they're doing it.
Well, yeah, we'll find out, I think, in the first few months.
If every
artist starts claiming.
Yeah, well, it's currently in early access on Google Play only, but it's a premium game, so it's $3.99 or £3.99. And we have got confirmation that there is that Android version. Sorry, there's that iOS version coming. So you can look forward to it. I'm really interested in this because it was fun. It's nice to have the songs you like playing in the background and see the game react to it. And just the straight up shmup of it all was entertaining. I like the big neon shooters. So yeah, keep your eyes out. Beat Hazard 2, we will keep you informed. Along with Pachang. They're a studio who originally did like a physics puzzler thing where you're kind of maneuvering a ball around this series of very white, very sleek environments using things like fans and buzzers and trapdoors and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then they went on and started developing the sequel to Warhammer Quest, which was a bit of a left turn because a different company, I think Rodeo, did Warhammer Quest, the original, which was good. And then Pachang took over and did Warhammer Quest 2, which was also pretty good. They have revealed Warhammer Quest Silver Tower, which is going to be another turn-based strategy game based on the Warhammer Quest franchise. It's difficult to tell exactly what this game's going to be, because I don't know if you've seen the trailer. It's pretty much just a big, pretty CG render of a play area with a camera like slowly panning around.
Yeah, it's not giving anything away.
No, floating in nowhere. And I don't know if that's what the levels will be, because the Warhammer Quest games originally, there was like a loose plot involved, and you were going through dungeons, and it was much more like the original board game. Whereas this one, it looks to me like you're being presented with single isolated levels with magic doors at the end of them. and you have to work your way through, like, their individual instances, and there are going to be like 100 of these levels that you smash through. It's quite promising, because I think the original, those two Warhammer Quest games, both by different studios, were both decent representations of the board game. And if you like your, you know, turn-based RPG-ish combat stuff, it scratched that itch quite nicely. They're probably making this a little bit more bite-sized and accessible, I'm guessing, but again, it's a guess. Pretty trailer. Can't tell a great deal from it.
No, I imagine this isn't gameplay, but it could be. So it's one of those things we're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, as with all pre-renders, lies. Beautiful, delicious lies. So we've got that confirmed for iOS and Android later in the year. No specific date, but we'll definitely keep our eyes on it. Scythe is coming to mobile finally. I mention this because we teamed up with Asmodee, which is one of the big publishers of all these digital board games. They've done loads and loads and loads of them. And we were doing streams with them at one point. And one of the games that we streamed alongside Terraforming Mars and a few others was Scythe. It's probably the game I played the most, which is this agri board game where it's set in Russia in a time where it's all farmers but also giant mechs. And you've got all the different areas of the country sort of around the board, or you've got different factions, and they're all trying to stomp their way across the land to claim the area. They're trying to get to the middle, which is this big production factory, and also trying to kick the crap out of each other in the process. So it's a hex-based agricultural board land grab game thing. Kind of a 4X. Mm. And it was very complicated, but I started to quite like it. I don't know if it was a sort of Stockholm Syndrome thing, where because I played it a lot, I started to... But I got quite into it, and even though it's very involved, there's a lot of different ways it mixes up the gameplay in each individual game you play. You can switch out the little boards that you're using. So as well as the board itself, you've got your own personal board, which determines like what kind of powers affect your faction and in what order they can be used. Because if you use one action, it might cool down another till the next turn, whether you like it or not. And those can kind of be shuffled around. So every game you play can be a little bit different. But I would suggest you, we don't really use it these days, but if you go onto the Twitch channel, you can see me playing the game. Do you play any of the big board games? Have you ever been a board game person?
Not really. I mean, obviously Monopoly and that sort of thing, but apart from that...
the worst board game.
But like not like the actual board game stuff. Like, no, it's never appealed to me, really. Everything Dungeons & Dragons-wise, no.
Dungeons & Dragons is a board game. It's a tabletop RPG, but I'll leave that to one side. board games are good, and I don't play enough of them, but that's only because you do need physical people in the same room. That's the big hurdle. But we've taken to having like games nights recently, me with some friends. And not even like serious big board game, just like fun, daft party games. But there is something nice about the physicality of it all. As much as we're all in our digital landscapes and we all live there and it's great, it is nice to have people in the same room. And it's just that much easier to, you know, punch someone in the arm in fury when they do something dickish.
That's true.
There is a thrill to that. It's like couch co-op, you know. That's something of a lost art, and I'm glad that I think the Switch has probably brought that back a bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, the likes of Overcooked and games like that.
With, you know, just two people in the same space actually playing rather than down a landline or a Wi-Fi signal or whatever. So, yes, if you are into the serious, big European agricultural board games, Scythe might be for you, and you'll be able to get your hands on the mobile version soonish. So the beta will kick off, and if you want to go and sign up for it, you can go to their website, which is linked in our story, and get involved. Before we do the new releases, probably worth mentioning the stuff that's going on with conferences internationally. It's something we talk about because we actually do these conferences in the form of Pocket Gamer Connects, but you might have noticed the whole coronavirus thing happening around the world, and it seems that it's taken a toll on some of the big game shows. And this is kind of twofold. On the one hand, they've cancelled MWC, which is Mobile World Congress, which is kind of a big one from the tech side of things. We often go there, but there's not a lot in the way of like games coverage. It's mostly like announcing new phones and new handsets and that sort of thing. And because of the, you know, travel bans that are currently in place and the, you know, restrictions and people just being a little bit antsy about, you know, catching something, in a group, they've had to actually shut it down, which is like a massive hit.
It's been around since like the 90s, hasn't it?
It's been around, yeah, it's been around a long time. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is, you mentioned E3, and E3's had a kind of a run of bad luck slash bad decisions.
Putting it lightly.
Yeah, over the past few years, ranging from like Sony or Microsoft, or I think mostly it's Sony being like, yeah, we're not turning up this year.
Yeah, Microsoft just, they're next door in their own event. Like, they're sort of part of it, but they're doing their own thing.
Yeah, and Nintendo have done that in the past. It's like, don't worry, we're not going to be there. We'll do our own streams, you know, we'll do our directs, and that'll cover us.
Nintendo actually have a huge presence on the show floor.
When I was there, they had a decent section, but, you know, it depends on the year. But they've taken those hits in the past. Then last year, they leaked the entire list of everybody's sign-up details. So all the journos who went to the event realized that all of their personal information had been leaked, which is pretty bad.
Yep, terrible for all the freelancers, you know, who have their home address and everything on that.
So, yeah, that really sucks. So yeah.
People I knew on that as well. Shocking.
Yeah. And I didn't go that year, thank God. There's always been chatter because of people not turning up about like the dwindling power that the show has, or the draw of it, and it's maybe becoming a bit more irrelevant in the marketplace. And now, Mr. Games Events, Mr. I'm doing the Games Awards, and my basically entire job is to sort of pimp the games industry, Jeff Keighley, ain't coming.
No, no show.
No show for Jeff. And so it's just like, bit by bit, it seems to be that the bricks are crumbling up the side of the E3 monolith.
Yeah, it's a shame because, like, E3 is a special event and it's still something I'd love to go to one day. It is a dream, but it's never going to be what it once was. It has been declining and, you know, they opened it to the public to try and make things better. But all I hear from people is it's less games and more sponsorship, like Monster Energy just plastered everywhere. So it's like, is it time to call it quits?
It's always kind of been a trade show. It's always been about them getting out there and selling their wares. But I think more and more now with the ability to stream the event, which we've talked about in the past, it's like, why would I bother flying all the way over there? The only reason to go there is to do business meetings, really. If it's just seeing the new games I'm interested in, I can see them in 4K streamed live. So it's more about going in there and doing deals. And increasingly, I think it's, you know, losing its shine in that regard as well. And I know what you mean about it being like a big kind of a classic staple of the industry. And before I went, I too was like, oh, I'd really like to go to E3. It feels like a thing I need to tick off a list. And now I've been and it's like, I'm not that
fast. What year did you go?
Ooh, 2016, 17 maybe? Something like that. A couple of years back.
I'm trying to think, 2016. That was quite a good year for a
mobile. It was a good year for mobile. It was the year like Lara Croft Go got announced. It was the year that FIFA were doing their big push for their new game. They were doing the whole, we're going to completely reinvent the FIFA mobile and it's going to be great. And Madfinger were doing Dead Trigger 2. So there was a lot going on there for mobile. Increasingly, they don't show a lot of mobile games on the show floor or anything. They just kind of announce stuff. I remember they did that when... Not Steamworld, why is that in my head? Westworld. No, not Westworld. That's in my head because it copied Fallout Shelter. There we go. Remember, that was a big announcement at one of the shows. So they still do reveal mobile things.
But... Yeah. And that was the year Breath of the Wild was there as well, if I remember right.
Yeah. But increasingly, you know, you've seen the streams and anytime they show a game and go, it's a mobile game, the crowd goes,
Yeah.
So it's like diminishing returns for actually doing that. All people want to know is what's on the PS4 and what's on the Xbox and all the rest of it. This year should have been interesting because they'll be revealing the PS5 and the Xbox Series X, you know, the two new versions of that. And I'm sure we'll probably get a Switch Pro.
We'll see.
New hardware is always an exciting time for these events. But beyond that, I don't know. Enthusiasm isn't there. And then add the coronavirus thing on top of that, to where people are now hesitant to travel full stop at the minute. It might all be fine by the time we get to E3, but we don't know how it's going to play out. I don't know. It's not looking great for these trade shows.
No. But, you know, if someone still wants to send me, feel free. I'm very happy to go. just putting it out there.
Out and about this week, we're going to start things off with probably the biggest release, which just went live. It's Shadowgun Wargames, which is We were just talking about Dead Trigger 2. Madfinger is the developer. Previously, they'd done Shadowgun Legends, right?
That's one.
Yep, and that was the Destiny one. This is the Overwatch one. It's been in soft launch for a while, and it's now properly live on all the platforms. And I've played a little bit. I think you've played more.
I have, yes. I played a few matches of Deathmatch, Team Deathmatch, and then did a one match of Capture the Flag. So it's a 5v5 first-person shooter, and as you mentioned, it's very inspired by Overwatch with the characters. So you get five characters on from the start. Well, you unlock a couple, but there's five characters total. So you've got Slade, Sarah, Revenant, Jet, and Willow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of fun. Which I wasn't too sure on it originally, because I'm not a huge Overwatch fan myself. But yeah, I found myself playing more games than I expected last night, and then I realised it was 1 a.m. in the morning. I was like, oh, I need to go to bed.
Always a good sign. Yeah, so I've only played a couple of games very quickly this morning. And yeah, it's kind of exactly what I expected, insofar as it's got a polished look to it, albeit a very Overwatchy look to it. So this is one of those ones where you can criticize it by going, ah, they've just taken a lot of inspiration, I'm doing air quotes, from Overwatch, and that's a bit sort of cynical. So yes to all of this, have that in the back of your mind the whole time. But on the other hand, what they're doing is like, well, there's no Overwatch on mobile, and until they do, someone's going to make one, and this is that. And they've already got a very solid foundation from which to do this, because they're quite good at this sort of thing already. They do first-person shooters well, very well, on mobile. So it feels pretty tight.
It does.
Didn't have a problem with the controls or anything. I've seen some people complaining that the controls aren't like... I don't know if they're complaining about being precise or too sluggish or not smooth enough, but I've seen a couple of people criticizing. I haven't played for long enough to really criticize it, but I don't know if this is people coming from a console and being like, this doesn't feel like Overwatch.
Yeah, I thought the controls handled quite well. How you quickly have to double tap onto the gun, and it brings up the zoomed in scope and everything like that.
Yeah,
I thought that transitioned really well. I'd love to hook up a controller to it, to be honest. I could actually see me properly get into this.
Yeah, because it is Bluetooth compatible, and so if you've got anything lying around, you can turn it into a proper one, inverted
commas. Wicked. The thing I did find an issue with was just the frame rate. By the sounds of it, they've been having issues just because more people have logged on than expected.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've already put on the website saying more servers are coming in exclamation marks. So.
Okay. I've had a game crash out as well when I was playing. So I think maybe the first few days there's going to be some stability issues with everybody jumping on. There is also, though it's free to play, monetization built into it as well. And there is a battle pass, which I think is $9.99 or £9.99 per season.
So that's about 3 months normally, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And so if you're, you know, afraid about spending money, if you want all the content, then be warned, there is obviously cash. But that's how these things work anyway. The rest of it is free to play for as much as you want. And yeah, it did feel like how I expected it to feel. I played a bunch of Shadowgun Legends, and it's that. I mean, arguably Legends is more my thing, because I like a bit of single-player narrative. And if people turn up and play with me, that's cool. Whereas I'm not the competitive multiplayer shooter guy. So this isn't particularly my flavour if I had to pick between the two. But this is definitely what more people want, I think.
Absolutely. So. I mean, normally I'm not, to be fair. But Apex Legends has massively got into shooting on console and everything. And then this could definitely scratch that itch on mobile for me.
Nice. Well, I'm currently replaying Titanfall 2, the best single-player campaign on console for
forever. I actually just beat that for the first time last week.
Really?
Yeah, because of Apex, obviously. So I was like, oh, I've got to go back. It was free on PlayStation Plus. Yeah, it's fantastic. It was
so good. That single-player campaign is amazing because they're just full of ideas.
Doesn't outstay its welcome either.
No, nice and short, like 5-6 hours, smash your way through it. But it's got so many different cool ideas. And that one level, which I still won't spoil for people, that one level where you're pressing the button to change between things, very clever. But Shadowgun War Games out right now, free. You're probably already playing it as we speak. Other things this week. So Veritas, which to me conjures the image of old people going to do euthanasia. But that's something else.
Yes.
This is a game that's much more in the style of your mists and your investigatory first-person puzzle adventure thing. So lots of pre-rendered backgrounds, lots of clicking around the environment, trying to find objects and clues to unlock doors and open boxes and type in key codes and all of that business. It's from Glitch Games, who have kind of made this their thing. They've got a bunch of games, a bunch of which I've played, actually. So Cabin Escape was one of them. Forever Lost, I played a couple of episodes of that. Yeah, The Forgotten Room, which was another. And all of these games are this kind of thing. Veritas is the sci-fi-ish version of that. Or at least it seems that way. To me, it looks like they're trying to do something to do with memory. But it's one of those, like, thoughtful, puzzler, old-fashioned 1990s point-and-click adventure style things. And you know if you're the person who likes that. So if you do, it's currently out on iOS for a fiver, and the name is Veritas, if you want to give it a look. Here's one I haven't played. Gameloft's got a new game out, which is smashing together a couple of genres. So, Overdrive City. How about you take a city builder and mix it with a racing game?
Sounds good on paper.
Sure. Well, they've got a lot of form in the racing game category, Gameloft, what with their asphalt. They've been doing racing stuff for ages. The city building bit, I don't remember if they've done one. Maybe they have. But I haven't played it. I've only taken a look at gameplay and buildings, factories, laying roads, all that kind of business. But obviously, there are cars driving around there. And then you get to build car factories and create your own cars. And then you get to indulge in races. And I don't know if you're actually controlling the races. I think you are. And they play out in a sort of top-down Micro Machines-y kind of way.
Mm. If you don't, it'd be more like Football Manager, but for cars.
Yeah, but I think that you do have some control over them. They're not there yet. Apparently, the competitive racing hasn't appeared, as in maybe you can actually race against other people, and at the minute you're not doing that. But yeah, it's a drifting thing. So apparently, 60 races across 6 chapters, plus all the city building stuff and vehicle customization. I'm sort of interested to play it just to see where the emphasis is, and it's a weird Venn diagram of things to smush together. But maybe it'll work.
Maybe.
Overdrive City is the name of that one, and that's out for free right now on the platforms. We'll mention this one because we didn't have a show last week and it came out then. It was quite interesting. Cookies Must Die. We've both played this one. Unusual anarchic little platformer, which is half Angry Birds in so much as you're using that pull mechanic to move your character around and keep him in the air in order to consume cookies. But like, very pretty looking graphics, quite bullet timey, satisfying fun. What did you think of it?
I thought it was Angry Birds meets The Matrix. Jack is the main character. He's a secret agent with special powers implanted in his body by government scientists. Of course. How you flick Jack around the stage felt very Matrix style. You then rack up combos and you keep going until you die, and then you get reset to the start.
Yeah, but little cookies are scattered around the level. You've got to get them. And the idea is that when you pull in a direction, you flick Jack that way. So it's not Angry Birds where you're pulling in the opposite direction and then springboarding. You are literally dragging your thumb where you want him to go and then release. But the moment you put your thumb on the screen, everything slows down. Everything goes bullet time, and then you can redirect him at mid-air. So you're twanging him around all over the shop. Not a new mechanic. You've seen it plenty of times before, but a really nice cartoony graphic style that's very sharp.
Yes.
And you can interact with bits of the environment. You can ping off signs and Jack can hang on to them. The little cookies all vary in size, and some of them are obviously quite dangerous, and you have to try and smash them from different angles. There are end bosses at the level as well.
I was going to say, they're very creative as well. I thought the bosses were adorable, but quite threatening for a cookie.
Yeah, and it's all very slick, and I was quite impressed. You need to find the key to unlock the gate at the end, so there's lots of pinging around and searching for the object to escape. It's nicely done. I was really impressed with it.
Mm.
So you can get this right now. I don't know if it costs money. I'm afraid you have to look that one up for yourself. I can't do everything for you, folks. But Cookies Must Die is the name. Go and take a look at that if you like. Sticking with foodstuffs, Dadish, which is a platforming game where you play as a radish who is a dad.
Ah, of course.
Hmm. Visually, this is taking a leaf straight out of the 16-bit early Mario playbook. And in terms of it being a straight-up platformer, doing the same thing, the idea is that your little character can move left or right, jump and double jump, and you are avoiding obstacles and trying to navigate the level to get to your little child Radish, who has run off, and he's got loads of children. Apparently, this Radish is very prolific in the reproduction department. So you're constantly searching for your errant offspring scattered around the area. And
quite a randy Radish.
It's short...
I had to do it. I'm sorry.
Oh, it was a mistake. So on the one hand, the platforming stuff is it's unremarkable insofar as I've seen the backgrounds and the visuals and the platforms and like all of it I've seen before 1,000 times, right?
Mm.
In that sense, meh. But the feel of the platforming is actually very good. Like, they don't have any buttons on screen whatsoever. They don't even have a left or right, but you control your left or right movements in exactly the way you think you would. It's your left thumb and, you know, you can imagine, you can picture there being two arrows there that you're hitting, but they're not there. But just instinctively, you're moving left and right and you don't make a mistake. You don't screw it up. It's automatic and perfect. And the jumping feels very precise and the movement feels very precise. So I was surprised at how much they nailed the touchscreen controls, and I felt like 100% in command of this Radish. But yeah, the actual level stuff, I was like, well, it's just another pixel art platformer with trees in the background and a little layer of grass over the top of some dirt and blocks that look like it came out of Mario and spikes that came out. It's just, you know, I've seen all this.
So you wouldn't times. Say it's rad?
Don't you dare. So it's £2.99 or $2.99 on iOS. I think it's free to play on both platforms, but you can remove the ads for £2.99 or $2.99. So no harm in taking a look if you really want to do that. We'll do honorable mentions as well. Company of Heroes came out. We mentioned that a few weeks back, which was the port of the strategy game. That's only available on iPad, though, and is quite expensive. It's around about £8 or £9. Haven't played it, but that's for a specific audience who will no doubt gobble it up. We've got Kick Flight, which is mental. I've only played like 5-10 minutes of it, but have you even seen this?
No. What is it?
I can't even, like, you're an anime character, and it's a third-person perspective directly behind. You double-tap the screen to fly through the air with your sword, and you fly around like you're a plane, but you're not. You're just a man flying around. And you're supposed to be, like, collecting gems at the beginning, but then enemies appear, and you're locking onto them and attacking them. There's other people with swords, so you run up and have mid-air combat. And there are, like, special actions you can flick up from the bottom of the screen, and then there's this big orb thing which you're protecting, which you can go and deliver your gems to, and it's like multiplayer 4v4 or 3v3 or something. Oh. It's a very weird combination of stuff. I spent 10 minutes going, what?
Yeah, I was going to say it seems like Dragon Ball meets like Xenoblade Chronicles or something, but
it does have a Dragon Ball.
You said the 4v4, I'm like, oh, right, so it's a fighting game as well.
Yes, it's a strange mixture, and I spent only 10 minutes and all of those 10 minutes of me going, huh? So I'm not going to try and offer an opinion, but it's out and it's free and it's interesting. Kick Flight is the name of that one. And Castle Ramble came out, and I don't even know what this is because I tried to open it on our test flight account and all I got was a black screen and music.
Boo.
Music sounded okay. That's my review. Castle Ramble.
Take it to the bank.
That'll do for this week. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week, I promise. Potentially with Rick this time or Colin as well, maybe? We'll see how it maybe. Goes. Either way, we'll come back for chats. Hopefully you'll join us again as well, Matthew.
I will. Go watch the Sonic movie as well.
Oh, God! We almost made it to the end. I'm sorry, listeners, that you had to hear that terrible piece of advice from a Sonic fanboy who thinks Sonic is good and not a terrible, god-awful, canonical mess.
The truth hurts, James.
Oh, goodbye.
Goodbye.